All comments, views, and opinions expressed during the following program do not reflect the views of this station. All topics discussed are meant for educational purposes only. Talk with your doctor before starting any new treatments. Welcome to Tell the Truth Faster, hosted by Stuart Altshuler, marriage and family therapist. Stay tuned to find out how you can open your mind to new possibilities in life.
Welcome to Tell the Truth Faster. This is Stuart Altshuler. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist in Los Angeles, and every week we deal with issues relating to mental health. My basic approach to things is a more holistic one, which means body, mind, and spirit, finding a sense of balance, a sense of consciousness of how our bodies and mind and spirit all interact. And in finding that balance and being more conscious of how each component is speaking to us, what messages they're giving to us, how to respond to it, how to integrate all that so that we are struggling less and stress less because we're more conscious of how we're functioning and why we do the things we do and how to implement changes in that. And again, the key to that is balance. So every week we, no matter what the topic is, you know, I try and bring a little bit of that balance into it. My guest who I'll be introducing a little bit later is Sandra Jacoby-Klein, who's also a marriage and family therapist here in Los Angeles, somebody that I've known and respected for quite a while, and somebody that has worked with me in this community dealing with issues around AIDS and death and dying, and living powerfully with it, and that's really what tonight's topic is about. And the name of tonight's show is Anyone Dying of AIDS Anymore? And it made me stop to think, actually, not just about what's going on today with HIV and AIDS in terms of how it's impacting our society, not just this community. And I couldn't think about what's going on today with HIV and AIDS without thinking back in terms of the last 20 years of my own involvement in dealing with HIV and AIDS in those around me as well as how it's impacted myself. And in doing so, I went to my bookshelf. And I have a lot of books on that shelf that I haven't looked at or opened in quite a long time. But they're there in a sense to remind me as a memorial, some of it a piece of history, but unfortunately some of that history beginning to repeat itself, which is part of what we'll be talking about this evening, I believe. One of the books I pulled off the shelf is called From a Burning House, and it's a number of pieces written by the AIDS Project Los Angeles Writers Workshop. It was edited by Irene Borger, who is somebody I also know. And these were mostly, as far as I know, men with AIDS who were using writing as a way of dealing with their HIV and AIDS as a healing method for them. And when I opened the book, a number of the pieces in here were by a friend of mine named Tony Gramaglia, who has passed away a while back. Made me stop and think, when did he pass away? And then I started thinking about other friends, clients, and for the life of me, it just all seemed like a blur. I couldn't remember dates. I couldn't remember how long this one's been gone, how long that one's been gone. I actually went to the file to pull out Tony's memorial program and realized that he died in 1995, actually on May 3rd, so it's actually just a few days ago, past his seventh-year anniversary. And then I saw the program, and I realized he was born on January 13th, and I remembered that every year on January 13th, I'd call him to wish him a happy birthday, and on January 14th, the next day, he'd call me to wish me a happy birthday. So many things started flooding back. And he was actually a stand-up comic and really knew how to make people laugh. And so I think it's fitting that I read the piece, one of the pieces that are in this book to open the show tonight, that Tony wrote. And it's entitled, Okay, So I'm in This Bed. Okay, so I'm in this bed, hospital bed, egg crate cushions, soft, clean sheets, inviting. I don't need to be in the bed, but I stay there. The TV keeps me there. The doctors keep me there. I keep me there. AIDS keeps me there. There are three chairs and even a sofa in the room, but I stay in the bed. My controls are there. Bed controls, TV controls, nurse controls, phone controls, disease controls. I am the good patient in the bed. I can make doctors laugh. I can make nurses love me. I can welcome friends from this bed, this hospital bed. At night, I turn the TV on before I go to sleep. I put it on a nothing station that has only static and turn it up as loud as the remote will allow. I need the white noise to drown out the sound of AIDS. No people. I don't want to know that there are people down the hall, in the next room, or across the way. But the white noise of the TV still does not drown out the sounds of the hospital at night. The flushing of a toilet, that hacking cough, a pulling back of someone's curtain, a voice on the intercom, a faucet next door, my own breath. You don't have to be awake to hear the screams of the man next door. You can't pretend it is just a sound. He is screaming, no, no, please don't, wait, not now. And then the screaming stops and the coughing starts. I know they have stuck the tube down his throat to drain the fluid. I know there are many scared eyes like mine opened now at 3:46 a.m., eyes that are listening. There is a set in room 416, another set in room 412, another set of open, scared eyes that should be shut and dreaming in room 411. But all of the eyes, those that can open if there is not too much morphine or Demerol in them, all those sets of eyes in the hospital beds are listening to this, to him, or were. You can close them now, your eyes. You wish you were somewhere else, so you could call the front desk and ask someone to please stop the man next door from dying so loudly, to stop injecting you with the fear of pain, to stop your eyes from listening to the death down the hall, in that room, in this room, in my room. So close your eyes now. Listen to the white noise of the TV. Try to drown out the sounds, drown out the fear. But the eyelids closed off. But the eyelids closed off a little piece. You can still see the empty room across the way where the black man used to be. You can't forget that you saw in another room legs too skinny to be legs. You can see through the crack in the door and the tangle of tubes that poke through another's chest. You can see her skin, too tight, too gray to be skin. You can see the fright. At daybreak, I turn off the white noise. I am back in control. In this bed, I can make it go up or down, call for a Coke, turn a station, open a blind, flip on a light, make a call. I keep feeling around for a switch to turn off the nights, turn off the screams, turn off the disease, but there is none, not here, not in this bed. I read that in honor of my friend Tony and so many others. I read that because it's been a while since I've really sat and thought through the names, the experiences. And the title of tonight's show is Anyone Dying of AIDS Anymore? I read that because it reminds me that being HIV negative all these years and being at bedsides and watching people get infected and, you know, doing things that were risky, doing them before we knew they were risky, and then sometimes knowing them, knowing people were doing these things since we've known that they're risky, watching friends get sick and die, and being left behind, someone HIV negative, and the grieving, the abundance of grieving that went on from the 80s through the 90s. And it gives me a chance maybe to grieve a little bit more and to remember them a little bit more and to remember that having lost so much of my own inner circle, so many close friends, and feeling that loneliness still after all these years, that it's important to remember. To remember that they're not living, so I'm here to live more fully. Back then, we were talking about gay men being affected, hemophiliacs, drug addicts. And back then, we're talking about the 80s through the 90s, so much education actually slowed down the spread of infections amongst gay men. And that's not so much the truth today. And we wonder how, with the education, with what we know, how can people be taking the risks that they're taking? How come it took such an increase in HIV infections in African-American communities and Latino communities for people woke up and finally started saying, we need to address this in our own community. We need to talk about sex. We need to talk about transmission. We need to reach out to teenagers who are being infected increasingly at a more rapid pace. We need to reach out to our seniors who are also infected and think that they don't have anything to worry about. I have a client right now who's 64 years old, a woman who was infected by her husband who passed away a number of years ago, had no idea what he was doing on the side and left to deal with this on her own. This is not just about gay men. This is not just about drug addicts. It's not just minority communities. It's about all of us. And that's what we're going to be talking about tonight when we come back after this message with my guest. So please stay tuned.
Tell the truth faster. We'll be right back after this station break.
Did you ever wonder where all of the new inventions come from? They all got started because someone like you had an idea. Would you like to be the next millionaire inventor? If so, please give us a call. New Concept Advisors. We can take you from your idea to your first invention success. New Concept Advisors Limited Liability Corporation is an invention company designed to guide you from start to finish. Call 602-748-1433 right now to schedule a free consultation. Yes, we said free. If you already have a patent or patent pending, we can help you market your new invention. You would be amazed at the many ways New Concept Advisors can help you with your ideas. Call us now at 602-748-1433 or visit our website at www.newconceptadvisors.com. And please tune in to Inventor Success Stories Monday at 1 p.m. on Hot Talk 1100 a.m. You may just be the next success story on our radio show. So call New Concept Advisors today, 602-748-1433.
Finding your passion in life shouldn't take a lifetime of searching. The answers are out there, and they might not be as far as you think. For clarity on purpose, passion, and prosperity, tune in to Discover Your Passion, Wednesday afternoons at 1 p.m. Your host, Julie Jordan Scott, wants to empower you to give yourself the gift of desire, the first real step towards personal growth and a lifetime of satisfaction. That's Discover Your Passion with Julie Jordan Scott, Wednesdays at 1 p.m., only on Hot Talk, AM 1100, KFNX.
We all know our country's experiencing rough times, but that's no reason to hate people who don't look like you. This is Mandy Moore, and I'm here to tell you that discrimination and violence against Arab and Muslim Americans is not what this country is about and will not be tolerated. If you know someone who is a victim of racial violence or has perpetrated a racially motivated crime, please call the hotline of United States Commission on Civil Rights at 1-800-552-6843. That's 1-800-552-6843.
A public service message brought to you by the Arab American Institute and the Ad Council.
Talk to our expert hosts. Call toll-free 877-900-5369. In the Phoenix area, call 602-277-KFNX.
Tell the Truth Faster is back. Here's Stuart Altshuler.
Welcome back to Tell the Truth Faster. This is Stuart Altshuler, and just like the announcer just reminded you, this is a live call-in show, so if you're so moved to share some of your own experiences or ask a question, the toll-free number is 877-900-5369. Getting right into the show tonight and talking with my guest, tonight's topic is is anyone dying of AIDS anymore? And my guest tonight is Sandra Jacoby Klein, who's a marriage and family therapist here in Los Angeles, who's been specializing in the emotional effects of illness, grief, and loss. And she's been working with the psychosocial issues of HIV and AIDS since 1982 in her practice and as a volunteer therapist with many AIDS service organizations. Sandra, I want to welcome you to the show tonight.
Thank you, Stuart.
And I know you and I have known each other for quite a while. I want to actually start by asking a little bit about professionally as well as personally what motivated you to start working in this arena of AIDS and grief the way you have. It's certainly been a long-term commitment to you.
Yes, it has been since the early 80s, actually. I remember being a volunteer therapist with AIDS Project Los Angeles when we were meeting in a motel on Cole Avenue.
That's a long time ago.
That's a long time ago. And I remember our meeting, I think we met in a train station in Stockholm somewhere during an AIDS conference.
I think you're right.
Right. Okay. I was working for UCLA on a hospice evaluation program. And there seemed to be a huge number of young men coming in with strange diseases and symptoms. And one of the people I was working with professionally was a gay man who was a social worker in the hospice. We began seeing that most of the men coming in were gay, and somewhere around 1982, AIDS Project Los Angeles began to come together, and Bill and I decided to do a bereavement group for people who were dealing with the deaths, the sudden deaths often, of these very young men. And we worked for 5 or 6 years doing this, writing our first article on gay grief. And then I began writing articles on multiple loss because there were so many deaths and so many other losses that people were dealing with this disease. Of course, by the early 80s, it had been identified by Dr. Gottlieb at UCLA. And the AIDS Project Los Angeles had to keep moving into larger and larger quarters, and we kept doing the bereavement groups and working with people with AIDS.
Well, you've been a real gift to this community, and I just want to acknowledge that, and I'm very grateful that you've taken the time to be on the show tonight. You were the one that came up with the title when I said, what would you like to talk about? And what came out of your mouth is anyone dying of AIDS anymore? What is going on from your perspective with HIV and AIDS today in terms of death and dying, in terms of infections, or, you know, what are you seeing?
There's no question that there's been a drop in the death rate. That's been pretty obvious. But what that means is that there are now more people who are living with HIV and AIDS. We know that in the United States alone, there are probably about 1 million people. Worldwide, about 40 million. And one of the most alarming statistics when you think about it is the one that says that about 16,000 new infections are found every day. And the majority of these are people under the age of 25. So even though, I guess about 1996, HART, the highly active antiretroviral treatments, became popular, the researchers thought that they would just subdue the virus and not cure it. But then they began to realize that HIV remains in the body indefinitely. So it's left people on very expensive toxic drugs, the one that can afford them. And because they were very young, most of them are now living on drug regimens, those that can take the medications. People think, you know, when you talked before about risky behaviors that lead to increased infection nowadays, people think, okay, well, there's a drug available. I can just take it if I get infected. It's not a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
What they don't know about are the side effects of the medication. They don't know about taking care of themselves. They don't know about the financial stresses and the change in your health. You can be fine one day, and the next day you can't get out of bed. So it's not as simple as taking a pill. Often there are many, 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 many pills, right?
Right, definitely.
Very complicated regimens and pills that relate to when you eat and when you don't eat and when you sleep and when you don't sleep.
And everybody's system reacts differently to them, and some people can't even tolerate certain of the meds.
Exactly. And if you can't tolerate them and you have to go on other medications, then your body has to begin learning how to deal with that particular treatment.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very complicated. And they know that when the medication is going to work, it works often because there's strict adherence. Well, it's very hard to have strict adherence when you're trying to live a life and make doctor's appointments and try to hold down a job and do all the other things that one has to do in the course of just living.
The basic thing that I've seen, and I know you have also, in terms of what you've just described, is it changes also one's sense of identity, one's sense of who they are in the world. It becomes less about, you know, so many of us are caught up in, well, I'm a therapist, or, you know, I'm a an actor, or whatever it is. You know, we identify sometimes with what we do, and what happens and what we've seen with so many people is what they do becomes taking care of themselves and dealing with doctors and dealing with an illness, and all of a sudden their whole sense of who they are and who they thought they themselves to be gets totally thrown out, totally shifted around, adding to the stress of the whole thing. And are you still finding that?
There's no question about it. I've had one of my patients reported this week that she was feeling better on the medications, but the regimen was so overwhelming. You know, she was trying to be faithful to it. She felt that she was doing well physically and the virus couldn't be detected anymore. And so she was berating herself that she should be feeling better. But in reality, she was still very confused and angry, and she felt like she didn't belong anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
She had to deal with these side effects. She had to leave her job. And when she felt better, she tried to go back to work and had to then deal with telling an employer where she'd been for the past 6 months or 7 months and how she was going to have time for doctor's appointments. She knew that if she stopped taking the drugs, the virus was liable to mutate. She was afraid that she would become sick even if she took the drugs. So she felt like she was a big mess.
Mm-hmm.
Like the drugs were saving her life, but they were also ruining her life.
Right. And on top of that, dealing with the emotional aspects of, you know, whatever anger may be there, whatever fear that may be up there. So, you know, it's like it's more than two tiers, but at least another tier is not just dealing with the practicality of the medications, the doctor's visits, how do you juggle, you know, maintaining some semblance of normalcy. At the same time, how do you then cope with the emotional roller coaster that goes on, the fear, the shame, the anxiety, the anger, all those other things start playing an enormous part in one's life.
There's no question about it. There was a study done recently in the Midwest of a group of people with HIV and AIDS, and the one thing they wanted most of all, other than hoping they would get better, was to not be discriminated against or stigmatized.
Mm-hmm.
That it's still going on. The populations that are mostly affected are the populations that are stigmatized. And you add that to all of the other issues that people are dealing with, and it becomes very overwhelming. You know, when I talked before about multiple loss, I like to distinguish between many deaths and multiple losses, meaning many other losses, like the loss of health and well-being and sexual freedom and employment, privacy, you know, all those other things that go on.
Yes, we'll continue talking about all of that and the impact of multiple deaths as well as multiple loss when we come back after this message, so please stay tuned.
Tell the truth faster. We'll be right back after this station break. Stuart Altschuler, a licensed practicing psychotherapist since 1974, wants to let you know about his website at www.tellthetruthfaster.com. You will find the resources you need in these areas: self-empowerment, positive thinking, attention deficit disorder, individual and group HIV/AIDS counseling, addictions and compulsive behavior, intimacy, and relationships. Get the information you need on these topics and more. Visit www.tellthetruthfaster.com. There's even a place to email Stuart with your questions, comments, and requests for information regarding his work. At www.tellthetruthfaster.com, you can find additional links for groups, organizations, and websites dedicated to help you identify and heal the issues you are experiencing. Visit www.tellthetruthfaster.com today.
Hi, how are you? I'm Wanda Lee.
And I'm Eileen.
And we're serving it up and dishing it out.
Oh, come on now, Eileen. The name of our show is a little misleading. Ain't nobody around here doing any cooking or serving.
No kidding, Wanda. We're serving up opinions and dishing them back out.
Helen here, who cares what you're doing? My bunions hurt and I'm out of smokes. In my opinion.
Oh, nobody be caring what your opinion is, you wrinkled up old camel.
Honey, do not talk to women that way. Do you hear me? Because until you look as good as I do, your opinion don't count no how.
Hi. The Mississippi meme off here. Y'all need to settle down before I have to slap you so hard your whole family fall down. Everybody knows opinions is like buttholes. Everybody's got one. Just so happens mine are right. Both of them.
You never know who's going to show up here. So give us a jingle. It could be you.
Speaking of jingles, we'll have a jingle for the butthead of the month. We'll even seal it with a big old kiss.
Every Monday night at 10 p.m. we'll be
serving it up and dishing it out.
So be there
or be a loser.
Edward Asner for the Department of Labor.
Does retirement seem like a long way off?
Good.
Because if you start saving now, all that time will make your money grow like crazy. And believe me, you're going to need it after you stop working. Is retirement coming faster than expected? Then there's no time to waste getting your retirement savings plan in order. It's never too late to make a big difference in how well you're going to live. Do it now, because saving matters.
To learn more, call 1-800-998-7542.
Here's your current Hot Talk 1100 KFNX weather forecast.
All right, Phoenix, good Wednesday evening. Orion with your KFNX weather forecast. Mainly clear skies for the valley today with a high of 92, getting down to 67 sometime tonight. Tomorrow, sunny clear skies and dry with some wind at times with highs hitting into the 90s with lows into the mid-60s. Currently, around the state, 51 in Flagstaff, 56 in Prescott, 74 in Tucson, and at 10:30, 79 degrees right here at KFNX, Cave Creek, Phoenix.
This is the 50,000-watt powerhouse station, serving all of Arizona and beyond. Hot Talk, 1100 KFNX, Cave Creek, Phoenix, a division of North American Broadcasting Company.
Tell the Truth Faster is back. Here's Stuart Altshuler.
Welcome back to Tell the Truth Faster. This is Stuart Altshuler. Tonight's topic is titled, Is Anyone Dying of AIDS Anymore? And my guest tonight is Sandra Jacoby Klein, a marriage and family therapist in Los Angeles, who has been at this work, I would say, as long as I've been, if not longer, in terms of dealing with HIV and AIDS issues, and particularly grief and loss. Sandra, before the break, we were talking about how something like this can take over one's life, change a person's whole sense of self, who they are in the world, how they relate to their bodies, how they relate to family, friends, and how they see themselves. Now, of course, that's not just relative to someone with HIV or AIDS. My dad just last week was diagnosed with bladder cancer, and the same issues would start coming up, you know, in terms of how this is going to impact, what changes it's going to bring into his life and those that love him, and how it impacts them. And I know you've dealt a lot, and you've done a lot of groups for people who are dealing with the grieving and are dealing with multiple losses and stuff. What are some of the issues around grieving and coping strategies that you find useful?
I think it's important to let our audience know some of the reasons why people are still dying.
Mm-hmm.
Beside the medication side effects that we've spoken of before and balancing self-care with other responsibilities, we have to remember that there are huge numbers of HIV-positive patients and those with AIDS who have a lack of access to and acceptance of any kind of effective treatment. The job situation changes, cause financial stresses. People try to integrate their treatment into their home or school or work environment. And when you mentioned seniors before, I'm very glad that you did that, because people's society's attitudes about seniors and sex and that kind of thing, well, we all know what that is. So what happens when people, seniors, go to the doctors, they're rarely asked questions about their sexuality or about their risk behaviors. And if they become sick, it's often with a very late, late diagnosis. And the HIV infection is found too late to start effective treatment. You know that that's what happened with women in the early years.
Mm-hmm.
Gay men were out in numbers, and people knew what was going on, and doctors were not examining women or checking them for HIV infection. So by the time they presented with any type of opportunistic infections, it was often too late for treatment.
Right.
That's going on with the seniors now.
Mm-hmm.
And one difference with your father's diagnosis or any of our parents who have illnesses, it's a little more expected somehow. Most of the people with HIV infection are young. They see parents and grandparents dealing with illness and drugs and medications and doctor visits, but it's very foreign to someone who's 25 or 20 or 30. And a huge portion of the people becoming infected now are college students, both sexes. So with good treatment, we've seen declines in some of the opportunistic infections, like you hardly ever hear about the PCP pneumonia anymore that killed people really fast.
Mm-hmm.
But what you do see is an increase in kidney and liver disease. And you know why?
The medications.
Sometimes the medication and sometimes substance abuse.
Right.
Which is an increasing risk behavior. So you often have chronic liver disease. In one of the teaching hospitals in Chicago, the patients came in with advanced disease with HIV, and they had a history of many failures of the drugs that were common for to HIV. But when you went into a public hospital, they found that the comorbid diseases were associated with substance use,
mm-hmm.
sharing needles, injection drugs, that kind of thing. I think it's important also to know why discussions about death and grief from AIDS-related illness are still important when we have all these new medications and treatments. I think it's now, like you found out with Tony, with your friend, that it's in the midst of this moment of treatment that many people are finding the strength to finally confront the enormity of their losses over the last 20 years. So the deaths aren't so frequent, but it gives people now time to take a look back and say, when did he die? How long ago was that?
Right.
And I think that's what you realized when you began thinking about your friends today. And,
mm-hmm.
and certainly I have my friends, my patients, my colleagues, our colleagues, right?
Yep.
Who, you know, what happens now with people who are trying to deal with the loss of role models, with the loss of leaders in the community? They've all died.
It's also an issue for the caregivers, too. I know a number of years ago I had a conversation on the phone with Michael Weinstein, who helped found the AIDS Healthcare Foundation, and he and I met actually when I was executive director of the LA Center for Living, mm-hmm. and was getting more involved with a lot of the community organizations, and you know, our paths crossed quite a bit. And about 4 years ago, we were having a phone conversation. It's the first time we'd ever really spoken at length, and realized that we were two of maybe four people we could think of that had been around doing, still continuously doing the same work mm-hmm. in LA. People have either died or burnt out and went on to other things and stuff like that. And so the issue of the multiple grief of the caregivers, mm-hmm. And, you know, what were our coping mechanisms that kept us going, or were we just on, you know, automatic pilot? which is partly what I think I was on at times.
I think people were, and those of us who have survived somehow found a way to deal with what I call compassionate detachment.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that you've given up being a feeling person. It's that you've chosen to find a way to separate yourself from what's going on so that you can continue to do the work.
Right. From a compassionate place.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And finding a different support system for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
I think those of our colleagues who burned out, that who were so intensely involved and dedicated to the work, weren't able sometimes to find a place for themselves in all of this. It was grief overload, too, not just burnout.
Right.
I think when you talk about grief, you can also include anticipatory mourning in that. We know that anticipatory is the kind of mourning or grief that you have over a period of time that we can't predict, but it precedes the death. HIV and AIDS is the kind of disease, of course, that has been eventually fatal. And once someone's infected, the virus stays there for the rest of their life. So it's very important to understand the anticipatory mourning that people go through. The worry about if it's going to happen to them, or
right.
The caregivers worrying about if my partner's going to die or my sister's going to die. And I think what's different when you deal with anticipatory mourning of HIV and AIDS as opposed to other illnesses is that everyone is expected to die. And people are so caught up in worrying about those who are sick and dying that there's no time to grieve.
Mm-hmm. And then we look at some people who have been infected, we know, for 20 years and are still out there doing very well for themselves and stuff, and they had been anticipating their own death years ago, and now they're still around and having to deal with, what do I do with my life now that it looks like maybe I'm not going to die so soon?
Right.
So when we come back after this break, we'll talk a little bit more about that, and so stay tuned, and we'll speak to you right after these messages.
Tell the truth faster. We'll be right back after this station break.
Can you believe it? I finally got a credit card.
Wow, this bank actually contacted me. I didn't think my credit rating was that great.
Getting a credit card is easier than ever before. Don't be fooled. Some banks capitalize on your disorganization. Late fees, hidden charges, they all add up if you're not careful. Financial Survival with Carol Walker is a radio show on every Wednesday morning at 9 that concentrates on how to become debt-free and financially fit through common sense financial education. There is nothing more exhilarating than being debt-free. That's Financial Survival with Carol Walker, Wednesday mornings at 9, only on AM 1100 KFNX.
Your business can go beyond barriers to be more than it is today. Having a business without boundaries is within your grasp, so tune into Business Without Boundaries on AM 1100 KFNX. Your host, Dr. David Livingston, can help businesses move to the next level. Dr. Livingston, lecturer and consultant, will address subjects important to improving your business, as well as explore new entrepreneurial business opportunities, including opportunities in outer space commerce. You will be able to get free advice from a talented, visionary business consultant and his guests. Business Without Boundaries. Boundaries only on AM 1100 KFNX.
Be sure to tune in to The Crux of the Matter with host Phil Duncan every Thursday at 9 a.m. right after IMS in the morning. Let's face it, you need more than just headlines to stay on top of today's important issues. You need the unique chance to hear from and ask questions directly to our leading national figures. By calling in your questions to Phil's distinguished guests, including current and former White House officials, secretaries of state, national security advisors, ambassadors, and renowned academic specialists, Phil allows you to get straight to the crux of the matter on issues that are important to you. Tune in every Thursday at 9 a.m. right after IMS in the morning here on AM 1100 KFNX.
If you are an honorably discharged veteran in need of long-term hospital care but don't think you can afford it, help is available. 47 states currently have state-run facilities that offer care at literally little or no cost to you. If you or someone you know needs help but you aren't sure if you qualify, call toll-free at 1-866-331-1944 for more information.
IMIS, Lycus, the best talk in the valley. Hot Talk 1100 AM, KFNX.
Tell the Truth Faster is back. Here's Stuart Altshuler.
Welcome back to Tell the Truth Faster. Topic tonight, is anyone dying of AIDS anymore? My guest is Sandra Jacoby Klein, a marriage and family therapist from Los Angeles and a colleague that I've known for quite some time and respected for quite some time. We were talking before the break about the anticipatory loss, not just of the caregivers, but of the people themselves who have been diagnosed with AIDS, who were anticipating having died, you know, early on in this epidemic. You know, people were told they had 6 months to live, and in some cases that happened. But as time went on, people started living longer and longer, and there are a lot of people that, you know, there are some people around that I know that have been infected for 20 years or more and are still doing well. But what some people are dealing with is having been on their deathbeds a number of times, and all of a sudden maybe the new meds or just some shift in their body, they're doing well. They have energy again. They're having productive days. And now what do I do with my life is usually what they say to me. So how do you respond to that, Sandra?
I ask them what they would want to do if they knew they were going to die tomorrow. It may be an odd thing to say to someone who's living with a disease like this, but it's a question for any of us.
Right.
What are our dreams? What are the choices we want to make? And I know what you're talking about because the people who adjusted to what we call a death orientation withdrew from everything. Often their social networks, they withdrew their bank accounts. They often cashed in insurance policies and maxed out credit cards, and then all of a sudden they're living.
Mm-hmm.
And it has created a lot of anxiety. People are feeling guilty. They think they're going to live forever now. It gets very, very confusing. They have problems orienting to jobs. Do they want to go back to a job that they hated before but made a nice living? Do they want to try something new?
Mm-hmm.
It sounds pretty confusing, doesn't it?
Right, and overwhelming to many of them, so they stay stuck not making any decisions and afraid to even bring it up to friends or therapists because everybody else was anticipating their death. So you mentioned guilt. Very often there's that survivor's guilt that goes on. I know for those of us that are HIV negative, it exists, but those that have been diagnosed with AIDS and are bouncing back and stuff. I know a number of them have talked to me about feeling guilty that others have gone and they haven't.
Yes, yes. That's also very important. Why me? We did the same things. We went the same places. Why was I left to live and why did Tom die? Yeah. And then they also say to me, I realize that I've been prepared to die, but I'm not prepared to live.
Mm-hmm.
People who put everything in order, you know, bought their cemetery plots and did all these things, even said goodbye.
Yeah.
And some of them were in their 30s.
Mm-hmm. Well, my experience of a lot of them is those that are not prepared to live now after this fact, very, very often, in fact, I'd say almost all the time, the issues that people come up with in therapy, like I'm not prepared to live and stuff, those statements were just as true before they knew they were HIV positive.
Mm-hmm. But they don't relate it.
Exactly. And to get them to dissociate blaming it on AIDS or HIV and taking some responsibility to the fact that a lot of these issues existed before HIV was in their consciousness.
Exactly.
And to deal with these issues like they were issues anyone would have in therapy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to live with a sense of passion because that's what hopefully all of us are being taught to do, and unfortunately not many of us were really taught to do that.
Well, that's true. Often when you get a diagnosis of a fatal disease, it kind of jump-starts you. But when it does, people often don't know what to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely true.
And how many have you known that said this has been such a gift because it's forced them to start looking inward, forced them to start assessing things, forced them to start cleaning up messes that have been in their lives and actually made choices that they like their life a lot better.
Yes, that no matter how long they're going to live, it's going to have a quality of life that they never even dreamed of before.
Right.
That's a very special gift, and people who are not ill often don't understand that.
Mm-hmm.
What do you mean it was a gift? just sounds so counterproductive. But if you look at it that way and you can help people make choices, I think it and increase their awareness of where they're coming from when they say something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
There are a lot of coping strategies that people can use when they're dealing with HIV and AIDS and living and dying.
For instance,
people have withdrawn from their social circles, their previous social circles, when they became ill and got so involved in medications. It's important to not be alone, to somehow avoid isolation and find people, groups, support groups, some type of a chosen family or a family that you can begin to relate to differently. I think it's important to counter the conspiracy of silence, to find a way to talk about this, to come out in the open with who you are and what you have. And it's often really difficult, isn't it, because of the stigma that goes along with this particular disease.
Mm-hmm. Now, early on, it was added to the stigma that so many of the people infected were gay men, mm-hmm. and it was the way they were coming out of the closet also to their families that they also had HIV.
Yes.
And now I know that a lot of women and a lot of people who, in African-American communities, Latino communities and stuff, are having that same sense of stigma and fear and a coming out of their own, so to speak, and fear of the same fear of abandonment and judgment.
There's an interesting group of people becoming infected, and they're not gay men, but they're men who have sex with other men.
Right.
Sometimes it's a cultural behavior.
Mm-hmm.
The men become infected, then go home to a heterosexual relationship,
mm-hmm.
so that women are becoming infected. It gets very confusing when this happens. When you have this conspiracy of silence and people don't talk about who they are and where they come from
and what they're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's possible to explore different kinds of behaviors, too. Explore the arts. Use anger to empower yourself. Most people get very depressed because they can't express their anger. But if you can learn to express it in a way that can empower yourself, that will often relieve some of the stresses that go with living with this kind of disease. George Solomon did a study many, many years ago talking about survivors, long-term survivors.
Okay, I'm going to ask you to hold that thought while we take our last break here, and I'll let you have a few closing thoughts on that particular thing when we come back, so stay tuned.
Tell the truth faster. We'll be right back after this station break.
Stuart Altschuler, a licensed practicing psychotherapist since 1974, wants to let you know about his website at www.tellthetruthfaster.com. You will find the resources you need in these areas: self-empowerment, positive thinking, attention deficit disorder, individual and group HIV/AIDS counseling, addictions and compulsive behavior, intimacy and relationships. Get the information you need on these topics and more. Visit www.tellthetruthfaster.com. There's even a place to email Stuart with your questions, comments, and requests for information regarding his work. At www.tellthetruthfaster.com, you can find additional links for groups, organizations, and websites dedicated to help you identify and heal the issues you are experiencing. Visit www.tellthetruthfaster.com today.
Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free. Everyone is familiar with this popular maxim engraved on the Statue of Liberty, yet every day thousands of people are wrongfully denied their freedom to take advantage of America's wealth of opportunity. If you have questions about the complicated topic of immigration, tune into All Aspects of Immigration Law, the show with a proactive desire to help people achieve their dreams of freedom and prosperity. All Aspects of Immigration Law, Wednesdays at 2 p.m., only on Hot Talk AM 1100 KFNX.
Listen to Healing and Transformation with Dr. Eric Alsterberg at his new time, Fridays at 12 noon. Dr. Eric is a licensed clinical psychologist in active practice. He will discuss psychological and emotional problems and difficulties with healing.
Healing and Transformation also features spiritual aspects and principles of healing. So if you're looking for direction, guidance, and solutions to life's difficulties and challenges, great or small, then tune in to Healing and Transformation, hosted by Dr. Eric Alsterberg. Call in and get answers.
You're listening to Hot Talk, 1100 KFNX. Tune in to Imus in the Morning from 5 to 9 a.m. and in the afternoons, the Tom Likas Show from 4 to 8 p.m.
Tell the Truth Faster is back. Here's Stuart Altshuler.
Welcome back to Tell the Truth Faster. This is Stuart Altshuler. And tonight we've been talking about AIDS and is anyone dying of AIDS anymore? And my guest has been Sandra Jacoby Klein. Sandra, before the break, you were talking about George Solomon's study. And so could you briefly finish up your thought on that and then we'll move on from there?
I will. He did a study on long-term survivors, and what he found was that it was very important to pay attention to yourself, to find a new meaning in your life, to be assertive and learn to say no. How about that one?
Mm-hmm.
And remember, and this is my thought particularly, that you always have choices. You may think that you don't, like the doctor says you have to take chemotherapy for this particular illness. And you feel you have no choice. You'll die if you don't have the chemo. But you need to look at the fact that you are choosing to have the chemo because of what you hope it will do for you, that you still have a choice, and that there's always hope, that the object of hope might change, but there's always some kind of hope.
Right.
So when you keep your sense of humor and you participate in life, it makes the road a little bit easier. And I talk about this in my book.
Tell us the title of the book.
The book is called Heavenly Hurts. It comes from an Emily Dickinson poem. It's subtitled Surviving AIDS-Related Deaths and Losses. And those who survive the AIDS-related deaths and losses, I think, have unique needs that haven't been talked about. And so I talk about them in my book. And we talk about AIDS grief and why it's different. And we talk about just plain grief and dealing with death in the workplace and the language of death and dying, how people talk about death or don't talk about it. So Baywood publishes it. You can find it, of course, on the web. And my last thought, Stuart, is that perhaps the greatest risk of HIV is believing it's not a problem anymore.
Definitely. I want to thank you for being on the show tonight, Sandra, and it's to me, always an important topic, and you always have something very important to say about it, and I appreciate all the work you've done, not just here in L.A., but all around the world. So thanks for being on the show tonight.
Thank you. I appreciate being asked, and I appreciate the time with you.
Oh, thanks. And if anybody wants to get in touch with Sandra, they could go to the website for the show, tellthetruthfaster.com, and email me, and I'll see that she gets anything you need to say to her. All of the shows that I've been doing now, this is my 41st show, are archived on that website, tellthetruthfaster.com. You can go back and listen to any of them that you've missed, or if you want to hear something that's been said again, feel free to, and please feel free to let me know what you think of what's been going on the show and any thoughts or anything it's been doing to help you. I'd really be grateful in knowing. I want to thank you for listening in tonight, and I'm hoping that what you came away from tonight was that there is a personal sense of responsibility for our actions, and not just our actions in terms of what we're doing to expose ourselves to the infection of HIV, but our actions in terms of how we take care of ourselves in general and how we let our hearts show up in terms of compassion for those around us and how we create a safe environment for people to speak their truth, like the women and those in certain communities that are HIV positive. How do we set up an environment so that they feel safe asking for the support they need? How do we set up an environment in our own homes that create a healthy space, a loving space for us and those in our homes and those that we invite into our homes This is the important thing. Whether you're HIV positive or not, the important thing is, how are you treating yourself? Are you doing something that really brings you passion and joy? Or is your life, in a sense, numb? And are you using drugs or alcohol or sex or other things to avoid dealing with whatever it is that makes you unhappy or the emotions that you're afraid to look at? Take some personal responsibility. Assume, like Sandra said earlier, if you only had a few days to live, how would you be living it? How would you live it fully instead of going unconscious? How would you value each moment, and what would you do? How would you express your love? Live each day as if you were living it fully, and that was your last day. So hopefully you'll tune in again next week. My guest will be Honey Ward, who's been on my show before, and we're going to be talking about living powerfully, which is very relevant. So thanks for tuning in tonight, and see you next week.
Tell the Truth Faster, hosted by Stuart Altshuler, is broadcast live every week at the same time. Thank you for listening.